Coming up on the Shelley Irwin Show podcast today, WGVU's general manager Jim Rademacher joins in to discuss 1 year after the rescission vote and our new model. We share part two of a visit to Muskegon Heights Read Muskegon Literacy Hub. The Grand Rapids Southeast Promise neighborhood is working on a book of collective stories. We talk to the author of Where the Water Meets the Sky ahead of her reading at The Bookman. And the Cherry Health picked sales and until September, but donated items are needed now. We have the details on that as well.
Well, tomorrow will be a year that a rescission vote happened. Let's talk about this, and I only get the best. I say that often, but I kind of mean it now. Our general manager of WGVU, Jim Rademacher, in the house. Wonderful job on the state of the station last night, Jim.
Thanks, Shelley. We thought it was important that we kind of update the community about what's been happening in this past year. With the rescission vote happening on July 18th, 2025, rescinding previously approved federal funding for WGVU that was a little over $1.4 million and kind of what we called seed money that made everything else possible for WGVU with the fundraising that we do locally in that. And we're transitioning now to this 100% local West Michigan community funded model where the money that it takes to bring you the Shelley Irwin Show and the news and information and the TV programs and activities out in the community, all of it comes from West Michigan. I've often said, we're not just here for you, we're here because of you. And now that is 100% true. So it's been an amazing, humbling 12 months as people have reached out. We have never seen this level of support, and we're so grateful. And the conversations and the concern that the community has really touched us here. And Shelley sees it every day when she's out in the community, and people, you know, you walk down the street with Shelley, and it's like, Shelley Irwin!
I
from across
back too.
The street. And it's Thank really, you. It's cool to be a part of. So we're grateful, but this... the thing that we need to communicate is this needs to continue. The rescission wasn't a one-time event. Yes, the vote happened at one time, but the funding happened year after year from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and our community service grant, and that is no more. So we're really hoping that the community sees its role in the success of public media and what we're able to do in West Michigan.
Jim, with 100% community funding moving forward, our team is involved more in the community. Highlight a couple of these touch points that were mentioned with the conversation yesterday.
Yeah. So the one thing that we really think is important for people to understand is public media is made for all. And it's powered by you, by the community. And that's kind of our new mantra as we move forward. We know that we have to live up to our end of the bargain, and that is that we're not just here with our hand out for nothing, just to pay some salaries. We're here because, and you're willing to support and step forward because WGVU is out doing things in the community that make West Michigan a better place. I think, and I've said this for years, the Shelley Irwin Show, one perfect example of that. But there's so many more things happening. We've been out and about at different events around West Michigan, handing out literacy kits for children from 0 to 18 years of age with different activities. It's not one kit. It's broken down into age groups. So it's kits for families with brand new parents saying, hey, here's how you raise a child to a level of literacy to get them prepped for school. Here's how you read and the importance of reading to a child from 0 to 2 years of old. And what are the normal stages? Oh, you've got a child that's still pre-K, so 3 to 5. Here's the activities that you can do. And we provide the resources that you can get your child ready for school. And then it continues on through the rest of the grades, activities that get our students not just to but through and graduating, because that's the marker of a healthy society. That's just one example. These thousands of literacy kits we've handed out. We were talking with community, and it was, if you asked if swim lessons were on my WGVU bingo card at the beginning of the year, I would have said, swim lessons? Public media? What? But we were talking to people in community, and they said, you know, my kids learned how to swim, but I can't take them to Lake Michigan. I can't take them to Millennium Park. I don't feel safe taking them to a pool because I don't know how to swim. And we've already enlisted or graduated two classes, adult classes, with partnership with the YMCA, Scott Lewis and the folks over here at the Y, right across the street from where Shelly and I are at right now. And Shelly, you're a proud board member.
I am a board member, board chair next year. So looking forward to that leadership, and rightly so.
Yeah.
The partnership.
It's partnership. That's what we're about. Things like that that are making an impact in the community. It's raising awareness about families that are in that gap between assistance and subsistence, and partnering with places like the Steelcase Foundation and the Kellogg Foundation to how do we help people bridge this chasm and get them to a place we all want to be, which is subsistence, not assistance. And so we're tackling those problems with partners. We're not going to be the ones to solve those problems, but we can be great partners to amplify the work that's happening in our community to create a better quality of life for people right here, our neighbors.
WGVU General Manager Jim Rademacher on the line. Yes, 1 year since the rescission vote, we move forward 100% community funding and partnerships. What do you ask in our final comments from the community? What's your vision? What's the dream?
Well, I would say, first of all, huge thank you to our community. Before rescission started, we had about 21,000 donor households to our community. As of today, we have over 26,500. That's explosive, tremendous growth. Thank you to everyone who stepped forward. My ask is that you not think this was a one-time thing, but this is something that we need to continue to do together. And we can be a strong and powerful force together in this community for good. And that partnership happens when members of the community, donors come forward and say, I'm going to do my part as a sustaining member at 5, 10, 20, 50, 500. We have somebody at $4,000 a month as a sustainer. It's what works for you and your family. We're going to do the local work. We're going to continue to bring to you the programs that you count on, like the Shelly Irwin Show here on WGVU-FM, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Antiques Roadshow, Masterpiece, Nova Nature, all these great shows, will make the local or national local. The screenings that we've been doing with librarians and the Ken Burns documentaries and Frontier to Freedom that we've co-produced this year. So we're going to continue to do that. We're asking you to say, I'm willing to be a partner and continue that partnership with your generous support today.
Thank you. WGBU.org for more information. All right, back to work, Jim.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Shelley.
Take care to you. We bring you part two of a visit to Muskegon Heights Read Muskegon Literacy Hub, soon open to the public. Today we meet Benny, Annie, and Sarah, all involved in a personal reading inspirational story. Executive Director Melissa Moore will summarize the need for the community. We begin with Annie, the wife of Benny. Benny's been tutored for quite some time and owes Sarah much to the instruction. Annie begins the conversation. How would you describe your husband?
I describe him real nice. He is very nice.
Yes. You remember your first meeting?
Yes, I do.
You going to tell us?
First meeting.
When'd you meet him? Were you a young lady?
Yes, I was a young lady in Mississippi.
Yeah.
So we met in Mississippi, and we got married in Mississippi.
And now you're in Muskegon Heights, and life is good, right? Brought you to Read Muskegon?
Because I would want more than what I had in Mississippi.
Did you know how to read as a child?
No.
Did you know how to read as a young adult?
No.
When did you learn how to read?
When I came to read in Muskegon.
Yes. What was that like?
Oh, they were really nice. I told him to go to school. The first beginning, he didn't want to go, but after he started school, oh, he got into school and he was on the go.
Yes, yes. And here we sit with books in front of you and more. I'm going to bring in now one that's responsible for some of your learning. What do we call you?
I'm the tutor.
Tell me your name and how you got involved.
My name is Sarah Emerson, and I've been tutoring for young adults and children for a long time. First, Benny's my first most senior learner who had never been to school a day in his life. So that was pretty amazing that he still wanted to learn.
How would you describe Benny?
The kindest, gentlest man I know, the most patient, and just amazingly strong, positive vibe that he gives off. He always finds a positive way to say something about someone, even when they haven't always been kind to him.
Benny, I know you have a very thorough story to share, but I want to stay with the topic of reading. How did you learn to read? Well, I'll let you answer that.
Well, when I first started, I started with Wynn, and she coupled taking me back and forth, and I just went from there.
And can you positively say that you are now reading a lot of books?
A lot of books.
Yes, yes. Very lot of books.
Very lot of books. Come to dinner, Benny. No, I'm reading.
Come, me and him both read it.
Yep.
We both read it.
Yes. Tell me more about how you have been working together.
Well, Benny came to me having spent 18 months learning his alphabet, all the phonic sounds. He was excellent at decoding. He knew his sight words. And I thought he was going to be able to jump right into a book. Well, we did, but we learned that when you're reading a series of words together, it's a very different format than just practicing individual sight words. So we built up on that. We started with reading some materials that were supporting what his great-grandson, Jordan, likes. And so that was some good materials that he would learn, read, take home, share with his great-grand.
I understand those great-grands are helping you out, kids as well.
Well, they help me out sometimes. But I just mostly wanted to do it on my own because I couldn't learn if somebody would be there all the time.
Right. Yep. You got to look out for number one and your wife, too, along the way. So what was it like to know that you could read a full book? That didn't happen overnight. You put in some work.
It didn't happen overnight. It ain't happened over a year. But when I got started, I didn't want to stop.
Why was that?
It felt good.
Because it felt good.
To read. And then that make me take care of my business better.
Yes. A lot of things in life, right?
Yep. Take care. I can do my money orders. I can do whatever I want to do. I can go to the doctor. I can fill out what I have to do.
Write your name.
Yep.
How did you know how to progress Benny, to give him more challenges?
Well, he kind of taught me because, again, we practice words and then we would read just for the enjoyment of a good story. So I started with some short stories that I thought would be comfortable for him and recognized quickly which words we needed to, you know, multiple syllable words were a challenge because he was strong at decoding to a level, but there were some hard words, and sometimes great stories have harder words in them. But he wanted the story, and so every time he asked questions, and then we would stop and talk about the story, and he would tell me some part of his life that I'm like, oh, there's a story about that. I'm sure we can find something that connects with it, and he wanted to learn. So we started with some Diary of America great middle school read books that talked about our history. And we were part of that. We tied in with geography because he wanted to learn. He had been driving back and forth from Mississippi to Michigan without he had a Garmin eventually, but initially he just drove by instinct, which is a little scary when you can't read all the road signs and somebody puts a detour out there and you have to change. So he had a lot of life skills that he has acquired, but there were still some that could be smoother if he had the skills of reading.
You got to know more than just stop and go, don't you?
Yeah. When we first started together, he took us a little while to get into them books like we want to. And after we got into the book, we can hold a conversation now like we want to. And I can ask her what I want to ask. She asks me, and then we go from there.
Does Benny have the choice of book? Do you stop and I don't want to use the word critique, but is there a learning as we read?
Yes, we have. I've learned from his interest where he wants to go. That's usually the start. So our very first book was about Life is So Good, a man who was 98 before he learned to read. And Benny at the young age of 75 at that point was just a kid, but we knew the idea of going through a whole life of raising your family, taking care of kids and grandkids and working in a number of different places, it was never with the skills that some of us assume we all have. It was a tough read because it's a little above our beginning read level, but it was such an important story because Benny recognized himself in so many parts of the story.
And how many years have you worked together?
Seven.
Wow. Sweet seven. What's the name of this book here in the middle?
The book in the middle of it all. Yeah, Brook City.
Lives are changed by these relationships as we look to say goodbye.
Each other. The fact that he had been raised, he worked with horses when he was young. So the ghetto cowboy story was a natural because he already knew how to raise and train a horse. The black cowboy is the fact that they're part of our history has not let us recognize how many black cowboys were out there. It would always televised only the white cowboys. So I wanted him to get the full history story. So we try to incorporate not just a good story, but a story with some history connections to both what he grew up in and the world that we are in now, and helping educate both of us. Because there's a lot of this I would not have known about until I read Ghetto Cowboy. And I read it because Benny liked horses, and I wanted to connect.
What do you say to someone that needs help with reading?
I will do all I can to get them to go to school. Come to read in Muskegon and you will learn. This one place will learn you. And ain't no doubt about it.
I learn as much as my learner learns, I think, in learning the skills and gifts I've been given, the fact that I can enjoy a good story and now share a good story with someone who didn't have the pleasure of reading for pleasure, but does now and chooses to and comes back month after. We meet at sometimes twice a week during the winter times, once a week in the summer times, because we want to read a good book every time we can.
Sarah and Benny, the Sarah Benny team, thank you very much for representing Read Michigan.
Yeah, Read in Muskegon.
And you too. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Melissa Moore serves as executive director of Read Muskegon.
We're sitting across from Annie and Benny, so they're hearing what we're saying, but what a joy that you get to witness here.
For sure. And, you know, I say a lot of times, and I think Benny's heard me say this before too, and Annie, that, you know, I don't always get to do the most fun parts as the executive director. I'm doing the finance and the reports and all those things. And when I'm sitting there doing that, it's people like Benny who inspire me, who make me think, I am not doing this for myself. I am doing it because every single person deserves the opportunity to learn to read. And no one should have to wait until they're 70 years old to find out that they could, you know, have done that all their life, right? And so I feel very honored to know Benny and Annie and to be a part of their life's journey and to do the work I do because I do it on their behalf.
And how does one get involved if they want to be a tutor or if they want to learn how to read?
Sure. So our main number will stay the same. It will come to this building, and it is 231-747-7273. So you can call that number, whether you are somebody who wants to be connected with a tutor or join a class, or if you want to volunteer like Sarah. Sometimes people aren't ready to be a one-on-one tutor, but we need help in our classes and our childcare rooms. Also, our website, readmuskegon.org, all of our contact information is there. If you're in Muskegon Heights, come on in the front door once we're open. We would love to see you.
here on the show, we share stories, as do my next guests. Let me introduce you to Grand Rapids Southeast Promise Neighborhood Community Advocates in the house. You'll be, moved to get involved. Glad that you are here. Casey Young, good morning.
Good morning.
Appreciate you. Ben Scheid, hello to you.
Good morning.
Meeting with our one of our leadership gurus, Megan, and she says, boy, you need to get the word out about the stories told by the neighborhood, and hence here we are. We call you Grand Rapids Southeast Promise Neighborhood. Is that Grisepin there, Ben?
You know, there's a few ways you could say it. We've made some jokes about that for sure. Sometimes people will say bless you after you say that, you know, and we've realized maybe we should work on that. So we have been working. But yeah, basically we are the Promise Neighborhood Program with targeted efforts to make some real differences.
Yes. Add to that, Casey, again, Grand Rapids Southeast Promise Neighborhood. There's some key words there.
Absolutely. So born and raised in the Grand Rapids Southeast area, making this very much a full circle opportunity and moment to really highlight all of the strengths and gems that these communities have brought to me, and I know a lot of people that I'm connected to.
And so together you represent a lot of work that's been going on, ultimately a fruition perhaps, a book of your collective stories, a revitalization of a wellness garden and more. But let's kind of ask why this needs to be done. I'll start with you, Ben.
Well, you know, I've lived on the southeast side my entire life too. I still do and I plan to. And if you live there, you realize how vibrant we are. You realize how artistic we are and how genuine we are. And we also have some struggle, and that seems to overtake every other story that we have on the southeast side. Because that same block that had struggle, the very next day has a block party with grandmas and grandpas and families. And even in our most tender areas that do struggle, is full of beautiful families. And their stories are so interesting and impactful. And it really kind of highlights how special that part of our city is. So the Greater Grisepin Project is about a lot of work. This book is just specifically to show how special we are, because we know who we are. And we want to share that.
Casey, your thoughts?
Absolutely. So I think Ben mentioned a lot of the things that I was going to say, but just to kind of expand a little bit more, the book especially is going to be something tangible that will be around for hopefully forever, to be able to highlight just again all of the great things that are happening in the Southeast. A lot of times the news, you see a lot of the negative sides of things happening in those places, but we are here to again highlight all of the great things happening. So very much just excited for this to come together, and it's also an opportunity to connect with folks that I haven't seen in a long time.
Yes, let's zone in a little bit on this book of collective stories. First of all, who are you interviewing for this, Casey?
Absolutely. So anyone who works, lives, or serves in any way to the Southeast areas is open to participate in this project. So we have been kind of canvassing at different community events and things like that. I've used my Facebook platform. I've actually, again, kind of spun around and hit up some old friends from elementary school, middle school. So yes, it's really anyone who's worked, lived, or served in the Southeast areas.
Ben, will the ultimate production be a book? And does it have a working title?
Yes. The ultimate production will be a book. It's funny that you say that, because really what's happening is we're having a conversation amongst people that maybe otherwise wouldn't. So the book will be a byproduct. We're hoping it's just the first book, in fact. But to dig in a little bit, Casey gave you an idea of who we are interviewing, but what that encompasses is pretty fun. So I got an opportunity to sit down with a bunch of the South High alumni, which that school closed in 1968. So the youngest person there is in their 70s, right? And so they meet, you know, periodically at Marge's Donut Den, and then also at New Beginnings restaurants, and to sit with a table full of folks that have lived in Grand Rapids and knew that experience, it's really cool. You know, it's just very fun. And so also doing a lot of research on this, you realize, like, we have told our story again and again, but it's really important to do it periodically. So this is kind of like a snapshot in time, a history book of us right now. And so this would be a fun one that we can pick up, that kids can be able to look at down the road that we can show our grandchildren and say that we were part of something, and really just kind of be a point of pride for us.
Yes. What, stay with you, Ben. So what's your deadline? When will this be in my hand?
Well, that's a funny question when it comes to an art and community project.
I know.
That deadline has already been extended. And so, you know, we are collecting stories. We are hoping to really collect as many as we can for this first book, probably within the next few weeks or month. We have collected an awful lot. We are hoping to have to edit some out. You know, that's the idea. But nothing will be completely unused. So our contract has been extended through the first of the year, which is fantastic. And so we'll see.
No,
you
like
will know
it's
when this book
on.
Is coming
well,
out. Let's put it that
yes,
way.
Yes. And before we leave, I certainly want to get your contact information because there still is time for people to tell their stories, right? Kaycelia, is there also a work toward a community wellness garden that's happening under your leadership?
Yeah, absolutely. So that is, I would say, more or less in Vince Lane. But I do want to highlight, too, as far as story collection, we are also collecting artwork. And that is an opportunity for even children to be involved, youth. We want to get them. We talked about some of the alumni and highlighting their stories. But we really want to highlight the children and youth that are growing in the communities today. So I would like Ben to expand on the community garden, if
art,
possible.
Well, accompanying art project that celebrates each person is a piece that fits with others to make one collective mobile. Yes.
All right.
Oh, you brought in show and tell.
Yeah. So here's a few pieces. So this is something that I came up when we were doing a collection event. One of our team members, Miss Pauline McGregor, who's kind of like our Southeast side universal grandmother. Everybody knows her if you're cool on the Southeast side. So we were doing something at her school, MLK Elementary, and someone walked in who did an art project with her for Art Prize in 2011. And they immediately went over to the piece that they did. And it was just like that. Like it was that day. It was like that moment. And I just thought, okay, community art projects work. It's just something that works. And so it felt a little weird to try to explain this book to people. And it took a lot of talking. And so what this project did is it gave us an opportunity to kind of engage a little more naturally, as we do on the Southeast side. And so Miss Pauline McGregor is also where the community garden is. So she is at 1314 Cass. That is our community garden. It's a full lot. It is a community garden that she launched years ago. This woman is amazing, by the way. Started a walking program that got up to over 40 people in the Madison Square neighborhood. And so she had a few strokes, though, during COVID. And the garden has kind of fallen by the wayside. So she is one of our senior members of our team. She's one of our favorite people. And to be honest, this is one of her visions that she has tried to have her entire life, and we are trying to help her see this through. This garden is also a place where we can do our interviews for people. And it's also going to be used kind of for education, for the whole neighborhood to just be in and really play. It's a natural thing, I guess. You know, it's just kind of something. We're planting seeds that we can maintain. That's what we're doing.
You are talking all things Grand Rapids Southeast Promise Neighborhood, doing good things, collecting stories, collecting art, building a garden, and more. Community advocates Casey Young and Ben Scheid in the house. Casey, winding down, what else is important here?
Absolutely. So I do want to highlight also the opportunity to, again, pull generations together. My mom is also been very instrumental.
Give her
in this
shout out.
Yes, Miss Lorraine Young, who isn't able to be here today, but is very much here in spirit, and I'll let that live through me in this work. But have an opportunity to, you know, work with, like Ben mentioned, Miss Pauline, my mother, and then myself, and then we actually made a connection that my sister and him went to high school together in the Southeast. So yes, just being able to make those connections and all of these things flourishing right from the Southeast side of Grand Rapids.
Ben, did I interview you in 2007 for Festival?
Yes, you did.
Let's do the math on that.
Over 19 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, you did, and I've grown a little bit since then. So
that's okay. We're both still here to talk about it. There we are. What do you leave us with?
You know, joining this team, I am one of a few people. I'm one of several people on our side of town that really have a good heart and mean well. But doing that alone is almost impossible. Joining this team has let me know just how valuable one teamwork is, and two, how beautiful we are on the Southeast side. We have a lot of players. And connecting those players is what's going to really make success for us, lasting success. And so I'm so excited to be a part of that.
All right. Where do I find out more information about Grand Rapids Southeast Promise Neighborhood and the work you're doing?
Absolutely. So we do have a active Facebook page. It's the Grand Rapids Promise Neighborhood, Southeast Promise Neighborhood. You can go right to that Facebook page, and it highlights all of the places that will be in the community collecting stories and art.
Easy as that. All right, community advocates, congratulations on what you're doing. Ambassadors for this wonderful GRESEPN, GRESEPN. We'll just leave it at that. Ben
you
and
said
Casey.
It all
right.
Yes, thank you.
Take care. We'll talk again when the book is out. How's that?
Yes, thanks.
Thank you so much.
It's a coming-of-age novel set in our UP. It'll center on Abby, a young woman piercing together the truth about the fire that killed her mother, a fire she survived when she was 7. No memory. Let's talk about that and more of the storyline coming to our area for your book signing and more, including anything that has to do with the backdrop in, of course, our West Michigan. Your book, Where the Water Meets the Sky, a novel is out. Diane Labeck, good morning to you. Good morning, and glad that you got to visit, Michigan as a kid much?
Oh, my gosh. Good morning, Shelley, and thank you for having me. And, yes, I mean, I just feel like my growing up experiences in Michigan shaped the person that I am today and the author that I am.
Well, you yourself having a journey while writing the novel, we'll talk about that. But Where the Water Meets the Sky, we'll see you on the 20th of this month at the Bookman. Your books are signed and available after the 21st in Grand Rapids. What are your strongest memories of traveling to Michigan?
Sure. So I'd have to say that this novel is a love story to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and to all of my childhood memories with my family. My dad's family is all from a small town in the UP called Garden on the Garden Peninsula. Most of the novel takes place on Garden. There were, of course, many trips throughout Michigan from the time I was a child, you know, all the way into my adulthood. My fondest memories would be sitting with my family, listening to stories. My uncle owned a commercial fish house right on the water. I have memories just going out on the boat with my brothers and fishing and learning how to fillet fish and picking blueberries and baking blueberry pies. And just, I think, just surrounded by love, surrounded by family, and just this gorgeous immersion into the flora and fauna all around me. And I think there's just also something about that whole Midwestern culture and the people that has really defined, I think, my own personality.
Thank you. Tell us a little bit more about your storyline in Where the Water Meets the Sky.
Storyline would be there's a fire, and a young girl makes it out of the fire with a book of matches in her hand. And she has no recollection of what really happened that night. Her mother perished in the fire. Her father was away at work. She moves away to Eagle River in the Keweenaw Peninsula. But does come back frequently to visit her family, the relatives that she has in Garden. And she, at about age 18, comes back to spend a summer with her uncle, assisting him on environmental study of trees. And it's over that course of the summer that she processes unrequited love, she falls in love, she heals herself, and really reaches a place of transformation where she can just be ready and embrace the rest of her life. You know, she's poised at that point for possibility, but she first must reconcile with everything that has happened in her past.
Would there be a bit of Diane in this work? There we go.
I think every novel that an author writes, there is some autobiographical material, not in actual per se, you know, not in just specific reality, but just the emotional connection with the land is completely there. And I think also just wanting to revisit that time in my life when everything was possible. You know, before we go through the brokenhearted, fractured pieces of our life, there is a time that we can tap into that pure essence of family, of love, of nature. And I intentionally set it in the 1990s because that was... I think of that as an era before really cell phones and screens took over, particularly in some of the more rural and remote areas. And I wanted that. You know, I wanted that purity.
Yes. Diane, you had some health journeys along the way writing this novel. Would you talk about this?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was working on the first draft of the novel and getting close to the end and was diagnosed with 5 brain aneurysms, 2 of which were breaking down. There was only one surgeon in the country, I think one of the few in the world, who could do this surgery that I required because the aneurysms were on both sides of the brain. And he was at Johns Hopkins. So in the middle of writing, I had to go down to Johns Hopkins. It was a little bit of an interesting, challenging experience because I got down there and he was diagnosed with COVID. I had to return home to New Hampshire, where I'm living now. And then when I went back down, all of a sudden he had pneumonia, had to go back again. So I was literally afraid to sneeze, living kind of on that precipice of what is this going to look like. But I did get in for surgery. The surgery went incredibly well. I will be followed up with 3 of the aneurysms for the rest of my life. But the surgeon truly saved my life. One of the risks, not only when we have brain surgery like that, it was like a 7-hour procedure, there is that risk of brain trauma and, you know, deficit loss. But there's also, there was a risk of blindness. And to wake up in the operating room and my surgeon walked in and I just thought, I can see. And that really changed me. It changed me as an author. I often say that a writer's work doesn't change until the author changes. And I really feel like my writing changed through that experience. So I reached out to my agent. I said, I don't want to circulate this novel yet. I want to take the year and revisit it and completely rewrite it from this new perspective. And so I did, and I'm really happy with how it came out. As my children say, Mom, this is your strongest writing. Mm. You know, the surgery and the whole experience really affected their lives as well. And then last summer, with the novel completed and with it having a home with Simon and Schuster, I took off in my truck with my dog, and I went through Ontario and then came into the Keweenaw Peninsula and visited all of the sites that the book, where the book takes place, camping and backpacking with my dog, and then going down into the Garden Peninsula. And I was able to get to the tip of the peninsula, which is Point Detour. I'd never been able to access that before. And it was just this really spiritual, remarkable experience to be able to just say, thank you, God, that I am here, that you have given me another chapter of life, and I want to capture that with my words and reach my readers. Yeah, it was just a real moment of praise.
And obviously your prayers answered, as we'll be seeing you July 20th at the Bookman in Grand Haven with your, again, signed books in Schuller. What do you anticipate questions when it comes to your book readings and signings, Diane?
What do I anticipate as a question?
Yeah, or how do your book signings go? Will there be a little bit of a read and then a question answer?
Yeah. So I usually just do a little bit of a presentation. I talk about what inspired the novel. I talk about some of the challenges that I had. Just giving them, I want them to get to know me as an author, because I think so much of the author influences the work. But then I'll also talk about the characters of the story, and hopefully will give something to the audience that can resonate with them and help them on their own journeys. And then certainly answer any questions they may have about my research, about my time in Michigan. Michigan has always been the place I return to whenever I face any challenges in my life. I have to go sink my toes into the sand along the water. I have to stand on the rocks. I have to walk in the woods, and I have to reconnect with my family there. It's really restorative.
Nice. How's the dog?
The dog is so good. She's 9 years old now.
Nice.
And she will be returning with me. So part of this Michigan tour is another road trip with my dog in the truck, visiting almost all of the independent stores throughout Michigan, the Mitten and the UP, and just really celebrating life and celebrating the readers and getting to know people, reacquainting with old friends and making new friends.
Wonderful. Well, we know Michigan is a special place, and as is New Hampshire as well, but thank you for the spotlight here. Where the Water Meets the Sky, Diane Lebeck, will spell that LESBECQUETS. How do we find out more about your work?
Yes, you may visit my website at dianelebeck.com. Last name spelled exactly the way Shelley just spelled it.
Yep.
And yeah, and just visit the website, visit Simon & Schuster's page. Yeah.
Good. All right. Travel safely. Thank you for gracing our West Michigan and continue writing. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Let's talk about an event that, well, it doesn't happen until September, formerly September 17th through September 19th, but now is when, the behind the scenes and the fudge is made, as they say. It's a cherry-picked sale. Cherry Health, your proceeds ultimately going. Let's talk about why the need for fundraising, and more. And I do only get the best, Carol Vili on the line, of course, board member, and you one of three instrumental in making this cherry pick sale happen. Carol, I call you a friend. Good morning.
Hi, Shelley. Hi. How are you?
That's all good. I'm good. Glad that you are here. I call you a friend, but even better for today, one of the three involved with our great Cherry Health to get the word out that you need some items for your cherry pick sale. Carol, thank you for your leadership as a great member on the board. Let's get into what you need and what's happening come September.
Okay. Thank you, Shelley. I am semi-retired, as are my co-hosts. And one of the things that you realize when you're retired is you don't need the same clothes that you needed when you were working every day. Mm-hmm. And we have decided that the best thing to do with those clothes is to sort of ask others if they will consider donating so that we could put on a great big sale of really wonderful things from closets of women that we've all admired. And we can put them on a sale that will benefit Cherry Health. And the people that donate to us will get a tax donation for the amount of the clothing that they're donating and be invited to a special sale, a private donor shopping party on September 17th. And September 19th, we will continue the sale for whatever is left and have that open to the public with all proceeds going to Cherry Health. So we're looking for good stuff. We're looking for really the top of your line. Anything that's not sold will go to Goodwill, but we're hoping, like today, yesterday, I got 5 bridal dresses from a local bridal store. I know there's a fur coat in there. I've given some of the things that I loved and they all had a story to them, but said, it's time that this goes on to somebody else. And I know that a lot of young women, particularly, it's hard to get started in the market and know what to wear that's professional and, kind of cool and classy. And I think we will have that if your viewers will help us add to our donations with theirs.
Carol, how does that happen? Where and when am I taking my stuff, as they say?
Okay. All you need to do is call our wonderful partner in this, Brenna Remick, call her text. She's probably a text person, so text her. 616-706-1358. 616-706-1358. If you get confused, I think you could probably call Cherry Health and they can direct you. We'll have them available for that. But I think Brenna is going right to the source, unless you know one of us personally, in which case we're happy to help you as well.
Drop the great names of your co-chairs, please.
Stephanie McNamara, Peaches McCahill, and myself, Carol Vili.
The top three. Cherry Health, let's talk about why fundraising and friend raising is needed.
Boy, don't we all know that healthcare has been challenging these past years for all of us, but particularly with some recent cuts, it's tough out there. And what Cherry Health thinks of itself as the regional health safety net. And I have to think that's how they see themselves. There are many services that Cherry Health provides to the community. Typically, those are dealt with people in terms of payment on a sliding scale if there isn't any sort of health coverage. And if there isn't, Cherry Health is also really good at helping people navigate to find ways to pay for their health care. But, you know, it's interesting, Shelley, and you know this too from being on the board. We don't just provide primary care. We provide women's health care. We provide pediatric care. We provide behavioral health care, which incidentally our sale is going to be held at the Sheldon Clubhouse, which is a place that is used for folks with behavioral health issues. And actually it's had some fashion shows there already. So it sort of already has a little history of connecting fashion and Cherry Health. We've got dental care that can come through Cherry Health. People don't realize that, I mean, which is really exciting. Vision care. There's obviously a pharmacy to deal with the things that people need. And there's some school programs that go on year-round. So Cherry Health is just that place when you don't know where to go and the healthcare system is not helping you. Cherry Health is the place that's there to help you get to where you need to go and deal with your health issues.
Yes, your passionate is evident, board member, and of course one of three chairpersons for this wonderful upcoming Cherry Pick sale, not till Thursday, September 17th through, and of course that 19th. We'll get you back to talk about that in particular, but now needing the gently used or the nice opportunities to bring the classy clothing to you so that you can sell and make the dollars so needed. Looking at my notes, I think that's good. I think, yes, to get you back for sure on the Saturday event. One more time, where am I taking my, what's my action item? Give Brenna a call.
You're going to call us to give your donations. And, I mean, again, we want your best stuff. But if you send other things, anything that's not sold will go to Goodwill. So it will have a place. But make our job a little easier by just giving us the cream, if you will, which includes designer luxury brands, special occasions, fancy dress-up, unique vintage pieces, accessories, no shoes, which is kind of too bad, but no shoes, but jewelry, scarves. You know, those kinds of things that can really just make an outfit. We would love to see some of that. Help us, as they say at CJ Maxx, stock the racks.
I like that. Hey, it's whatever we can borrow, again, just to make life bigger and better for Cherry Health. I like this. You say hopefully you're looking to excite a younger generation of thrifters and fashionistas or fashion thrifters.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think that all of us are looking at ways to do more with less. And this is a great way to get a piece of that. And some really interesting, probably vintage things as well. The good stuff that they made in the good old days, not fast fashion, for sure.
You bet it. Well, again, I know the three of you, and what role models you are, and of course, paying forward your worlds to the next. It's a Cherry Pick sale Thursday, September 17th, Saturday, September 19th. But now is when your goods are needed to be part of this. All right, thank you very much, Carol Beely. We will see you soon, and appreciate your leadership.
Thank you, Shelley. See you at the sale.
Dr. Sue says sometimes the questions are complicated and the answers are simple. Have a simple weekend. Stay safe. Again, WGVU News keeping you updated on all of the air quality facts and figures that we need to know. And no, I'm not running outside today. Maybe tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a great weekend. I'm Shelley Irwin.